Hello, mech fans, and welcome to the Valhalla Club. Grab yourself a Timbiki Dark, set up that paint booth, open that spreadsheet, and join us as we talk all things Battletech.
Hello and good evening, folks. Welcome to the Valhalla Club. I'll be your bartender for the evening, Matt the Northman. With me, or joining me, is Mike the Viking. Ben, Mr. Bourbon, or at least the spirit of bourbon, as we'll call him for the rest of the episode, and Mr. Zimmer. How is everyone doing? Only one person can respond at a time, so Mike, go.
I'm good, man.
Awesome. The spirit of Ben, come to us.
I'm present in the moment.
Zimmer, how's it going tonight?
It's going good. I'm glad to be back here again.
Yes, we're glad that you could join us again, and Zimmer just might be a more consistent presence on the show. We'll put it that way. We're glad to have him. Yeah, so we'll talk about why Ben's only semi-present tonight, but glad to have everyone here. As always, we like to shout out our sponsor for the podcast, Ares Games and Minis. We love it with our arms dealer updates. If you've been shopping on Ares Games and Minis like myself, you've seen that they've recently got a large stock of printed hex tech from Thunderhead Studios. I use that stuff a lot, although I print it myself because I've got 3D printers. But if you don't have a 3D printer, Ares is a great place to get those just shipped off to you already printed. Definitely lots of iron wind metals getting shipped in to Ares. Seems like every week he's got a new stock of iron wind metals. What are your guys' favorite metal mini? Let's start with Zimmer.
Man, I can't say I have a favorite one yet because I have so few. I was fortunate enough, some time ago, I went to a tournament, and Derek so kindly, he supplied the support for that event. I did get a clan artillery platform. It is a nice hefty paperweight. You know, I don't play clan wolf, so I'm never going to use this thing. I forget what it's called. It starts with an A, but it's pretty neat.
Interesting. Yeah, that was not on my list. Artillery unit from Ares. but awesome. Mike, what you got? You got any metal minis?
I've got a couple. I have a lot more still in the blister. Like, a lot still in the blister. But I do like... It's one I guess most people hate. And it's probably why they're so excited it's in plastic now. But the Savage Wolf, I love that thing. It looks so cool. But apparently, a lot of people have a lot of trouble putting it together. I go for tabletop look, you know, table ready. It's a war game. I just put on a big old glob of some CA glue and quick dry spray. And I just, I don't pin nothing. I just super glue the shit out of it.
Not a pinner. I see.
I like my Savage Wolf. It looks dope.
Your Savage Wolf. I'm sure it's pretty stonky, right? Pretty thick.
Yeah, I've got it in a cool pose too. It looks like I've only got one leg on the base. It looks like it's in a run.
See, when you say Savage Wolf and dynamic pose, to me that's like kind of those two don't mix because it's so big, but yeah, I guess that works.
Look, it looks cool. That's like what it. I went for.
I like it. I like the Savage Wolf locust pose where it looks somewhat like it's moving. Cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while because everything's been packed up from moving, so maybe it has both legs on the ground. Maybe it's just like in a walk, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's what it is, not necessarily a run.
Yeah, I'm looking at a Shadowhawk that only has one foot on the ground, so now I'm imagining a big old beefy boy with only one foot on the ground. That would be pretty cool to see. Pretty interesting. Ben, what do you got as far as metal minis? What's your fave?
Dude, I got so many metal minis.
I know you do. You're the king.
I got so many that are my favorites too. I don't have like one favorite. I got like 20 favorites. I think the one, we'll go with the one I'm sitting here staring at, is the original Sagittaire Mini. I always like that because it just, it's just looks aggressive as hell, you know.
Is it big and stonky like the plastic one, or is it even bigger?
It's bigger.
Oh my goodness.
It's bigger and it's got more pointy bits.
More guns sticking off the front?
Yeah.
Say it ain't so.
Yeah. Here, I'll awesome. Take a picture of it.
Well, my favorite is the Galahad, actually, because, there's no plastic for it yet, the glass spider. But I just love the dome up on top. I think it looks cool. So maybe I'll feel differently when there is a plastic one, but that is my favorite Iron Winds at the moment, is the glass spider. I don't know if you guys ever watched Star Trek the Next Generation, but that's what it looks like, is on top of the head of this mech is like the part of the Enterprise that like takes off from Next Generation. It's kind of crazy. There you go. Deep cut. Anyway, as we're talking about Ares games and minis, there's also a couple other things that they've got in right now. Some Somerset Striker boxes, which are going out fast. So if you want one and are looking for one, hurry and jump on Ares. He's also got a sale on Battletech Encounters. So if you didn't already get yours with the Kickstarter and you want to try it out, it's kind of like a push your luck game. Just kind of a fun way to jump into the universe without too much pressure. Yeah, jump over onto Ares Games and Minis. We appreciate you, Derek. Great guy. Let's see. Let's do return and report right now. Before we jump into the main metal, we have one big return and report. But let me. I'll return a report for myself first. So what I've been doing is I've been prepping for an upcoming event, Desert Hot Drop, and I have been printing terrain like mad for both Alpha Strike and Classic BattleTech events, and painting whole bunches of terrain, and I get to show pictures here in a couple, probably starting in a week, when I've got a bunch of sets put together. And I've been playtesting some scenarios for that event, both on both sides, Alpha Strike and Classic BattleTech. It's been fun, but it has been really chaotic to mix that with my work schedule, which keeps me out of town a fair amount during the week. So, been pretty crazy, but I have enjoyed it a lot. It's there's a lot of cool, especially terrain out there now that you can get as STLs and to print it out and see it on the map is really cool. So that's what I've been up to. Mike, you've been able to get anything in?
No.
We'll get you there, Ben. Or
I'll get there eventually, man.
Yeah. Zimmer, what you been up to?
So mostly as of late, I've been playing on Tabletop Simulator for with various people from the Valhalla Club Discord. Not to date when we're recording this, but just today I was playing again with Legion from the Discord. Just running, you know, the Bungle Tech campaign missions. I've also continued to do that with Brent on the Of Mechs and Men streams. So hopefully, I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but I think me and Brent will be doing mission 5 in short order. So if you can't catch it live, you could certainly watch the VOD after it goes up.
And is that on Twitch that you and Brent do it?
Yeah. That's on the Of Mechs and Men Twitch channel. I think if you just punch in Of Mechs and Men, you could find it pretty easy. If not, the link is literally in the Discord. You can find it.
Awesome. How's that working? How's Alpha Strike on Tabletop Simulator?
Honestly, it's fantastic. Break Time Phil, who's in the Discord, has done a lot of work into scripting the game. So, you know, it's incredible. I don't know how he does this widget, the wizardry that I don't know how he does it, but it'll do things like calculate your shots. He's even gone as far as to start experimenting with implementing aerospace fighters, since our last episode was, you know, dedicated to talking about that. Awesome. So yeah, fun stuff happening over there.
It's awesome. Well, good to hear that that's working well. I still need to jump in onto the Tabletop Simulator world. I still haven't gone. I have it, but I've never even opened it, so I need to get in on that. Is there like a normal time that you're playing this, even kind of outside of the time with Brent?
Outside of the time with Brent, you know, it's kind of spotty at the moment, but I'm thinking about doing it late nights on Wednesdays. I'm Eastern Standard Time, so normally around like 9 o'clock is when I become available to do this kind of stuff. I'm definitely willing to play with more new people on there and get that snowballing in the Discord. I think it could be pretty fun.
For sure. I need to jump in, so I'll have to line up a time and I can jump on with you. That'd be cool.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go with the greater half of Ben. How was the greater half, man? The greater half.
Gen Con. Gen Con was good overall. I'll give it a 4-star rating. We got in there Tuesday. Met up with Charles Gideon from Wolfnet and Chandler from Armor Up on Wednesday. And hung out with them for a little bit. And then we had to go to the CDT meeting, which was Wednesday night before Gen Con started. We got to pre-purchase things that were going to be in the booth. So the big ones were the Third Star League Battle Group and the Third Star League Assault or Strike Group, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
The one that had the Savage Wolf in it, and then the one that had the black, what's the black Dagon thing? Not the mouse.
The Lament?
Had the Jackalope and all that stuff in it. The J-27.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah.
And then Gothic was a big deal.
I saw.
Yeah. So that was decent. Standard stuff. And then Thursday, I spent the morning walking around the vendor hall with the wife. And then she took off to go hang with family. And then I played in a narrative game, an Alpha Strike narrative game, which was the invasion of New Avalon. And apparently they set it up in 4-hour time slots starting at like 10 a.m. on Thursday, and it went all the way to like Saturday pretty much. So I think I ended up in the second game of it, which was a pursuit of curative forces by the Davians through a city.
So this was like a continuous campaign, but people just stepped in for different time slots then?
Right. Interesting. And then things you did in one game affected the next game kind of thing, you know?
Cool.
That was pretty neat. I got to roll dice with the OMAM crew. Brent, Aaron, and Kanan were all on the Davian side with another player. I can't remember what his name was. And then I was on the Curita side with kind of one guy that had some experience doing Alpha Strike, and then one guy that was pretty much brand new. So I think Oman was a little mad because we didn't fight much.
You just ran away?
I mean, it was the whole mission was pursuit. We had to start at one edge of the map and go to the other edge of the map, and they came in the turn behind us. And so, I think
that's the hard part about pursuit missions. It's like set up to not have too much interaction.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you play them on Mega Mech with like the Mech HQ stuff and the missions they have in there, there's usually a force that comes in from the direction you're going. Side.
Yeah.
And you got to fight those dudes. Well, that didn't happen. So, and we got to pick our forces too.
Oh, interesting.
It was one of those things that I looked at the forces that they had, and when I looked at the mission, I was like, all right, let's take all hovercraft and fast mechs. And we just spent the entire 4 hours just running away. Got to the point where they were getting a little frustrated, and they were like, you know what? We're just going to blow up some buildings in the city because we have nothing else to do.
So, yeah, you would think that a continuous kind of day long or weekend long campaign would have the same forces across. You know, they bring the forces, and then you just step in and play it. But
it's they did that. Like, they had like the CD agent running this thing. I mean, he had probably, I would say, at least 6 or 7 battalions of minis painted up for the different forces, and you just got to choose from those forces to start the game. And then if the damage carried over, you know, criticals carried over, all that kind of stuff. So we were relatively fresh. So I assume by the time they got to Saturday or even Friday, it was getting a little shaky.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Yeah. Like I think the scenario could have been helped if they'd had a Davian force coming in from the other end of the map to kind of slow us down a little bit. But I think that was the next game after ours where the Davian forces that were in the city, when we got off the map, the next game, they got ambushed by curative forces in the city. So
snap.
Yeah. So it's pretty decent. Yeah, and then
you played against a Davian force here. This is a little off.
Well, I told him I was a sleeper agent. So
there you go.
We didn't really fight too much. So, you know, I wasn't in a conflict with my own Davian morals. So
there we go. There we go.
So I played in that. And then after that, I ran Drafted for War for CDT. Which is a lot of fun. I always like running Drafted 4. You tend to get a lot of good folks in there that are just having a good time throwing dice and getting to walk away with some minis. Friday, I played in doubles in the doubles tournament, the 350 doubles tournament with Zenikrol as my partner.
Cool.
So we had a good time. I don't know where we placed that. We kind of got to the – we won our first game. And then we realized what the standings were and who we have to play. And we're like, we're just going to lose the second game so we don't have to play people that we don't like. And so we ended up playing against Jeff Stone and his son, which, of course, playing with Jeff is always a good time.
Oh, yeah.
We get a little loud. And so it was a good time. Zen and I both brought a Rastom force. It was Ilclan era, so we brought a Rastom force. I was the anvil. I only had a star of Rastom guys, and it was two assaults and three mediums or three heavies. So I was just throwing lots of firepower, and wow. She was our hammer running around there, getting all the objectives and doing the stuff. So, so it went pretty well. Had a good time. It was a long day though. And then I finished that up around 6 p.m. on Friday, and I ran Alpha Strike Academy for CDT for about an hour and a half, teaching new players how to play Alpha Strike.
Yeah.
And then Saturday I ran Revelation. And there's
something
with that you and I can get into, but I had three players show up. I had five that paid for tickets, but only three of them showed up. Two of them were from Alaska, Mike.
Hey-o.
Out around Anchorage.
I have yet to get tied in with my peoples.
Yeah, well, they got the email. They're gonna try and hook up with you at some point.
Heck yeah!
But they were a couple older guys that they'd never played Alpha Strike until they came to Gen Con and went through the academy. They're hardcore classic guys. So, and well, one of them's a hardcore classic guy. The other one hadn't played classic since the 1980s. So it was mainly a learning game of classic for him. And the other one was a younger gentleman, about 11 years old, who came fully prepared and ready to go. So we had three players for Escalation. Luckily I'd built a force to be a backup, and so I ended up playing the 11 year old while the two Alaska guys played each other. And then they bailed out around lunchtime because they're like, we got other stuff we want to do, and we're not prepared for this type of stuff. So, me and the 11, the 11-year-old got a kind of a one-on-one teaching session about advanced Alpha Strike stuff. So,
the master class
for about two games. So it was a good time. He had a lot of fun. He walked away with the prize, which was a force pack at the end.
Nice.
So I think he had a good time from Columbus, Ohio. Good kid. Asked a lot of really good questions, really into it. So, and then after I was done with that, we played Masters of Minions. It was the inaugural first ever Alpha Strike Masters of Minions, playing with doubles, the doubles Wolfnet 350 doubles. So that was Charles Gideon and I partnered up, and we played the Bovies, Tom and his son, I think Daniel, right? Wow. Yeah. Which was a lot of fun. I don't think I'd gotten to play Tom before, They were rather dismayed towards the end because Charles and I had a Fedson's mercenary force that we took that was between the two of us. We had three mechs total, and 8 squads of battle armor and like 8 delivery systems for the battle armor. So, and the first game was King of the Hill. So the King of the Hill domination mod. And so, of course, Charles and I just wanted to do something silly. So we just basically took all of our transports and battle armor and dumped them in the middle of the field.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that we put some pictures up in the Valhalla Club general chat when we were doing it.
I did see those.
Yeah.
It was pretty gross. So
how did Bowie react to this? Because he faced a similar plan when Tals and I did this at KSAG, and he wasn't too pleased then, but
yeah, he still wasn't pleased. And it didn't help that Daniel double tap Bowie didn't help out very much because his dice rolling was so bad.
Oh no.
He couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, and it turned into a rather frustrating game, but I think he did end up having a good time. We were That's talking good. Trash and doing what we do, you know. So that was game one. We played 2 games of doubles for Masters of Minions, and the Bowies were first, and then we had Carl Franklin as our next minion opponent with Travis from Denver. Which I didn't even put 2 and 2 together. He put his minis on the table. I'm like, man, those are awesome looking. And I had commented on his minis like the week before Gen Con, saying, oh, I'll have to keep an eye out for you. And he said his name was Travis. And I was like, oh, Travis, yeah. Jim Falcons. Cool. Those are awesome, man. And I was so tired by that point. And it wasn't until afterwards I was like, oh, you're Travis from Denver. Duh. <You know?
laughs> Oh man!
But we only got through like 2 turns of that game, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. And
oh man,
the classic guys had finished, and we're like packing up, and we're like, Carl Franklin had a couple of drinks, and you know, he was kind of tired, and he was like, "Yay, let's just concede. I don't think we're gonna get very far on this one." So we kind of called it, and that was that. So Gen Con was pretty fun. I'm sure there's going to be a very detailed breakdown on Wolfnet and probably OMAM too.
What did you think of the heat system for the alphas, for the Wolfnet stuff? How do you think?
You know, I can see the efficiency of it, and it does make sense from an efficiency standpoint. But my thing with it is you lose a lot of the camaraderie you get in a big tournament. You know, when you think back to like when you and I went to Adepticon,
yeah,
how you had everybody playing, you kind of knew people's names sitting next to you left and right and stuff like that. With the heats, you miss out on that because you're like, oh, I didn't even know he was playing in 350, you know, and you get some weirdness in the ticketing and, you know, how the heats are set up, because if you play in 2 separate heats and you win in those heats, then you go to the finals, but somebody else in one of those heats gets bumped up to take a slot too. So it gets a little weird with heats. Like I said, I understand the efficiency. I understand table seating, butts and seats, all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
it's one of those things where I feel like you kind of lose a little bit of the community sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that, you know, both, I think the big ones are Adepticon and KSAG and at LVO as well. It's like, you're all in the same room playing around each other. And like, you see, you know, you hear over in the corner room, Goober like yelling at something and everyone's laughing about it. And then, you know, you got somebody next to you, oh, headshot. And yeah, so that's like in a big room setting, it kind of adds, I think it kind of adds to that whole like feel of a tournament, although it's a kind of a relaxed tournament in my mind, but
yeah.
So I could see missing that where you have just small groups just, you know, coming in periodically or something like that.
Yeah. It just seemed very like quiet, you know, mm-hmm. like you know, because you really only had like, I think the most I saw in one of the heats was like maybe 10 players.
Oh, really?
So it's very kind of subdued and stuff like that. So you lose a little bit on that, you know. Andrew and I talked a lot about it. Charles and I talked a lot about it. You know, it'll probably get, like I said, Wolfnet will cover it in depth. But all in all, like I said, it was good to see a lot of people. The BattleTech area at Gen Con was pretty much packed the whole entire time.
Nice.
So it went over pretty well. So
how do you think, since it was the inaugural Alpha Strike Masters and Minions, how did that go over?
I think it went over well. I mean, every master was sold out. You know, we had, you know, multiple players because they would play one set of masters and then they would go to their second game with a different set of masters. And pretty much most of the masters were all the podcasters and maybe a handful of writers, you know, of shrapnel type stuff. So it went over pretty well. And I know I talked to Topa afterwards, sent him some feedback and things like that. And they're looking at expanding because we only had 6 tables of masters for Alpha Strike, and we're looking to expand it to 8 to 10 tables. So,
sounds like the timing may have been a little bit late or something, or is that just how they
do it? Well, yeah, we got a late start. And you know, I'm not shy when I comes to talk about CGL, but you know, they kind of showed up a little bit late. We got a late start getting organized and getting things sorted out and getting players to where they needed to be at. So there was some lateness. I think we were supposed to start at 7 and we didn't end up starting until like 8:30. So
yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, it was a rough go, but I think they got it a little bit better sorted out. I know there's going to be some expansion to the Alpha Strike side, which is great in my mind, because for years and years, the Masters of Minions has always been classic.
Yeah.
So you're kind of leaving out some of your player base with the Alpha Strike side. So I think it was a good move on CDT's part to put that together.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
So yeah, it was a good time.
Cool. Glad you're able to make it. And now you've returned with a case of the death.
Yeah, the usual con crud, you know, cough and sniffles.
Yeah.
So,
it's not my fault this time.
Fault this time. You lucked out.
Yeah.
I'll blame it on Charles. Charles.
Yeah. To the listeners, I can't edit that out. So you're stuck with the sniffles.
That's what you get.
It's part of the ambiance, right?
Look, we got to listen to it. You got to listen to it. That's how it goes.
even the brown stuff doesn't help that. So I can't drink enough bourbon to make it go away.
Yeah. Your usual tonic is not doing.
Yeah, so. That's my usual tonic. Yeah.
You call it the brown stuff?
That's my healing elixir.
You said the brown stuff, and I did not go to the booze. Like that's like, you know, it's gold. You know, or like bronze.
It's brown gold or the brown stuff. Look, give me a little bit of that brown.
Oh, man.
Not the Cleveland brown, but
a little bit of that.
Or the hot brown.
Yeah. Don't there's flush it down
with the brown. Horrible.
Yeah.
Cool.
Gross. Well, gross.
Yeah. Let's not go there. Yeah. Great return report. Thanks for that, Ben. We're going to rock on now to the main metal for the episode. And what we're going to be talking about is, to kind of jump back to our previous episode, we kind of jumped back to getting on the board, talking about rules and talking about Alpha Strike stuff. A while back, we talked about campaigns, and we're going to talk about campaigns again tonight. So we're actually going to talk a little bit about the Chaos Campaign system. And some basics, some thoughts about it, our experience with it, and just to kind of get your minds churning on using the Chaos Campaign. So with that, I'll just kind of go around the horn and see what everyone's experience is with the Chaos Campaign. Mike, do you have any experience playing a Chaos Campaign?
Playing it, no. I have perused the rule set in the past when I was trying to create something. I was trying to cook, you know, and well, it didn't happen, so but that's because I got caught up with other stuff. A lot of times I try to create something and then I jump way too fast into the deep end, I do this regularly. So if I'm doing it again right now, but that aside, I have read it. It seems fairly simple. The war chest points.
We'll get there.
There are points where could be like, it's confusing to me, but that's because I've never actually played in a campaign style scenario before. So I haven't, I don't have that background for the light bulb to immediately go off. And I'm sure some people that have been doing campaign stuff or like D&D or like just all kinds of stuff where they could read that and instantly just be like, ah, got it. But that ain't me. I'm slow, you know?
How about you, Zimmer? What's kind of your background with Chaos Campaign?
So I think I can say I've played quite a bit of Chaos Campaign at this moment. You know, what's going on right now with the Bungle Tech campaign is, I believe it's firmly rooted in, you know, Chaos Campaign. On top of the Bungle Tech campaign, there is also the Chaos Campaign Mercenaries, which came out with the Mercenaries box. Ever since I've had my Kickstarter with my local playgroup, we've been diving headfirst into that, even having our own Mercenaries League. We played that for a solid 6 months, you know, having a Mercenaries League. I think we could talk about more about mercenary side of Chaos Campaign on a later date, but I really do like this format of play compared to your traditional just, hey, I got some dudes, you got some dudes, let's just do a pickup game.
Yeah, it kind of has some, you know, the carrying from one weekend to another or whatnot, from one play session to another, I think is really cool. One of its strengths for sure. Mr. Bourbon, yep. I know you've had some experience with the old Chaos Campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely goes back a ways to the beginning of it, pretty much. But, you know, I've had a couple of campaigns I've done using it. And then, you know, obviously for writing some of the scenario stuff I do that, you know, I have to really deep dive into it and make sure it lines up with the Chaos Campaign system when I write Turning Point stuff. Mm-hmm. So, pretty familiar with it. It definitely is due for a refresh on CGL's part, but, we'll see where we get with that. But
yeah. I, you know, we recently on the podcast, we kind of went through a lot of the Jihad source books, and you get a lot of Chaos Campaign kind of little modules within each of those source books and stuff. And I know I've taken the Chaos Campaign and somewhat modified it before the Mercenaries kind of version came out and kind of, you know, changed some things in the Chaos Campaign system. But I have enjoyed kind of a lot of the features of the Chaos Campaign system in some of my own campaigns. So I've definitely used a lot of it as well. And I think we'll just kind of talk about some features of it, some things that you use to get started. And we'll just kind of give some thoughts on those. So first things first, there's a free download. A free download of this, the Chaos Campaign Succession Wars. Is that correct? Is it free?
Yep, it is. It is yes. Free.
Okay, I was right. Thank goodness. So this is free from Catalyst. So an easy, no dollars, no cents purchase to get started looking at these kind of a campaign style of stuff within the Chaos Campaign. And it's based within the Succession Wars, but would you guys say this is easily applicable to other eras?
I believe so. Even with just minor tweaks, I think you could take it all the way out into the Ill Clan era.
Yeah, I think one of the minor tweaks that I would say, and this gets to the starting of like how you get started, but the fact that your forces are still, it's still matched on each side by tonnage, I think is perhaps where the Succession War shows its age a little bit, and where that might be need to be changed somewhat for eras after the Succession Wars. What do you guys think about that? I know there's still some people out there that do matches by tonnage, but I don't see that as a great way to go if you want to have comparable sides, especially with, you know, especially like during a clan invasion, that would be pretty rough. Clan versus Inner Sphere, just matching by tonnage. What do you guys think?
The introduction of the advanced tech from clans and beyond nullified the tonnage matching, or like the tonnage pairing, I don't, whatever to call it, balancing tonnage. Yeah, they kind of nullified that. So pretty much from clans and beyond, you gotta go to either the BV 2.0 or PV if you're doing Alpha Strike.
Yeah,
I would like to add, they do reference, you know, the tonnage a lot, but I believe it's written in these rules that, you know, it does, you know, suggest that there are other ways to balance your forces. So it's not all the text is going to refer to tonnage. However, you absolutely could switch to BV or whatever's appropriate for what you're willing to do.
Yeah, I think when you go through this and I don't know when BV started to be used more, but this, you know, it says there's a section about getting started, and that's what it has as far as like you get started, one player selects 12 mechs of your choice, and then the op four, the opposing force selection, is just a matching tonnage. Like you're saying, you could use like a matching BV or something like that. I think that'd be better, especially through later eras. If you're just going to be in succession wars, I don't know. I can't remember actually doing tonnage even in just succession wars. But so have you guys ever tried that, just doing tonnage for an op four?
Absolutely not.
It's my old method.
No,
that's my old method. That's what it was when I started playing. It was all based on tonnage, you know. So it's, but we didn't have we did have campaigns back then with tonnage based stuff. So, you know, it, once the clan invasion happened, that's where it got real dumb real fast.
Yeah.
Because obviously a 75 ton clan mech versus a 75 ton succession wars mech,
oh man,
they are not the same.
Yeah. You just say like a mad cat in a, you know, any
in an Orion.
Yeah, Orion. Oh man. It's two different mechs for sure.
We call that a scripted loss. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would defend my stance by the fact that I'm so new to BattleTech. I've only been playing the tabletop for, you know, easily 2 years, but I've known it for a little bit longer than that. I have known nothing but BV2 and Alpha Strike being just a thing. So, you know, I never was exposed to a time where, you know, tonnage was a standard, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where this could be one of the things that's easily changed, and it makes sense to do that. Especially if you're playing in other eras, and if you just change, instead of, you know, every time it refers to tonnage, you put in BV or BV matching or PV.
I would like to add real quick. I am looking for the PDF, and I found the exact quote from in here. For game setup and balance, there in the section it says the percentage must be applied to whatever system the GM uses to balance forces. This module assumes tonnage will be used to balance forces. So it does explicitly state you could use whatever system. It does not, you know, come out and say, hey, use BV, use, you know, this or that. It just says use a percentage of whatever preferred system you have.
Yeah.
So I believe
BV was, I mean, if this was like before BV was widely used and it was the only way that it was used, and then BV came after, maybe that's the reason why it's in there.
I could be wrong, but checking like the copyrights in this PDF, it does say 2019. So BV absolutely would have been a thing by then. Right. And even Alpha Strike was around. So I'm not sure if this was written with that in mind, you know, at first. Again, it just says like everything in here, the system assumes you're using tonnage, but it gives a percentage. So to do a percentage of tonnage or a percentage of BV, you're going to get that number with math, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of where you start, is you're going to pick out 12 mechs. You get, you know, however you're going to do the force selection. And there is kind of this option to do it with, maybe there's one person that's being the GM. I think in most cases, it's probably used more as kind of a player versus player. but you might have, and it explains this in the document, you could have one being the attacker, one the defender, or do some interesting things. I know there's the instant action system out there for classic Battletech that you could use for particular scenarios. But you have kind of both of those options, and there are, you know, there's a section at the beginning about getting started with your 12 mechs. I really do like that within this section of these 12 units, your mech warriors start at 3-4, which I think is fantastic because then they can actually hit something rather than being your typical 4-5 and just kind of wandering around and hitting the dirt or whatnot.
That seems so you like start with... So you start with veteran troops rather than your standard normal run-of-the-mill guys.
Yeah, which I think is great. I think that's really good. But that, again, that kind of relates to, I think BV becomes even more imperative in that case. Because if you just have tonnage and you're not equaling that PV change from the 3-4 pilots, then the op 4 becomes either even more imbalanced or maybe even less. So, yeah. Again, I just think the BV is better than tonnage. So, there you go. And it as it goes through kind of this startup section, it does say that this most of this is kind of given in the fact that you're like a mercenary company on your own. But it does say that you can use this as a particular faction. The one thing that I will say in the faction section is that it says players should not worry about a given faction's access to the mechs they want to play with. I love to use the MUL, and I love to go with some restrictions rather than just saying I can play with what. What do you guys think as far as, you know, the pros and cons of limiting yourself to a particular faction stuff on the MUL versus just playing whatever you want? What do you guys think about that?
I guess my initial question before I actually like respond to that is, when did the MUL come into existence? Do we know?
It actually references the master.
It does.
It references in the text. Yeah.
Okay.
The sentence after that paragraph, it says you can look at the master unit list if you really want to embrace a faction specific play.
Gotcha. Yeah. I wasn't on that page.
Well, get on page, man. We're page 5. Yeah. Come on. Snap that. Yeah.
I'm reading ahead now.
okay.
Yeah, but well, in that sense, I like being like the faction aligned, being a purist. I'm a fan of the restriction.
Yeah, me too. I like having some restrictions. I think it's more challenging and more rewarding than just okay, you can bring the same mechs every time you play a different faction, because then it doesn't feel very faction-y to me. But then again, if you're just playing mercenaries, then it is a little bit more kind of what you want anyway. But Zimmer, Ben, what do you guys think?
For my thoughts, whenever I play like an op 4, typically I'm always being like the game master. So when I'm playing the op 4, I like strictly adhere to MUL. I will go on the MUL and I'm like, all right, what am I playing today? And I just throw it together based on that. And there's a lot of interesting combinations you can find. But for my players, and even when I'm making my own mercenary units, for my own mercenary units, I'll put my own restrictions on. Usually just it boils down to whatever I have painted, you know, at the time. That's what restricts me more often than not. But for my players, sorry?
Sayla.
But for my players, I don't typically restrict them in that sort of way. We typically do play the later eras. So in a sense, I might ask him like, you know, hey, just pick any faction you want. You know, just for example, I've recently had a player who wanted to play a Hanamochi. And I was like, okay, cool. Hop on the MUL, look at what the Trakonis Combine has. You know, your mercenary unit just has a background with them. And he was able to put a perfectly serviceable list with that. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you know, I'll ask, like, what key mechs do you want? And then I'll give them a faction to build with. And then that sort of builds their background of sorts. But I never sit there as a hard rule, like, you know, you got to play this faction. You know, yeah. I think that's overly restricting.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't, unless it's like some sort of tournament or something or some sort of particular event, then I'm usually with whatever you want to do. Although I always worry a tiny bit about, are people just going to cherry pick like the best units type of thing. But I think in a narrative campaign, it makes more sense just to be a little bit freer, a little bit more open. But one thing I was going to bring up is the force manuals, because I think those are the rarity system in that kind of makes it really cool. So maybe like if you want to do a particular unit that was really common in another faction that's not your particular faction, but since it's so common, maybe you could say that it was easier to capture through salvage or something, whereas a really rare one might be harder to capture through salvage or something like that. But I think the rarity tables in those are something that can add into this discussion of kind of sticking to a particular faction or whatnot.
Yeah, I agree. You know, sometimes I just want to take a panther, you know?
there are many to have. There are many to be had, yes.
And a lot of parts around the battlefield that you can use to fix them up after they explode.
Yeah, sure. Plenty at the Davian and Steiner borders.
Loads. Do you like to stick to units on the MUL, Ben, or what do you do?
I prefer it now, just because it's so handy to use, unless you're playing, you know, like one of the scenario packs or something like that. Some of those have like homegrown kind of units and stuff like that. But for the most part, I like MEL just makes everything so much easier than trying to, you know, do math out of the back of a book somewhere, you know, on how to build your force out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is really a great, easy to use tool.
Yeah, great resource, especially for putting together different lists. So that, yeah, I think there's definitely, you don't have to follow all this, but they give you options to either do, you know, be a mercenary group or, you know, be a house unit or something like that. But there are different options how to set up your force. But there isn't too much more than that, you know. 12 units, op 4 should be relatively similar, and that's what you have to start off with. You also use what are called war chest points. We'll talk about those in a second. But basically, the campaign is a series of what they call tracks. And I really, like, I think my first difficulty with this system is the fact that this term is used. And I don't know why, but for me, tracks, I don't know why you don't just say scenarios or something like that. Do you guys have any thoughts about it?
Mission?
Yeah, like something like that, where tracks is like this word that doesn't mean that much to most people in the game, I think. So I don't know why.
And maybe it comes from their little flow chart, you know, where it's on page 15. Mm-hmm. And I think when you see that flow chart, the tracks make sense, because then it's like, okay, you're following this train track because there's all these arrows everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I think if I'm looking at the flow chart, being able to connect track and mission makes sense. And I'm there with you, Matt. It didn't make sense. I was like, what the hell's a track? And then I keep reading, and then I see this flow chart, and I'm like, okay, I get it now.
Do you think it comes from being part of the system where one track or one mission affects another one or the one you're going to play next, right?
Yeah, there's the initial, you know, the very first mission, right, as they call the meeting engagement track, which is where your mini campaign starts. And then depending on who wins, well, okay, are we going with direction A or direction B? And then that will then split off into, like, so looking at the flowchart, if the attacker wins, okay, now we move on through the breakthrough track. But if the defender had won, now it's a pursuit track, because the defender is now pursuing the retreating attacker. You know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then so on and so forth. So then it makes sense, because like you're just following a train, and each mission is the switch track, and depending on the final outcome, depends on which direction that switch track goes for the next mission.
I would say that if I were to use the term track, if I were creating a system, then it would be like you choose one track, and it has three missions no matter what happens. Right, you can't go off the track on a spur every time a mission happens. But if I were to remake it, I would just say linked scenarios or something like that, or linked missions or something like that. But track gets me off on the wrong start. But that's the terminology that's used, is track, and that's what it means.
Well, I think what Mike just said, like, hits the nail on the head of why they chose tracks. Like, it does feel like you are sort of being, railroaded, you know, into each track, and then, you know, it just splits off from there. Like, for me, tracks, I agree with you. It tripped me up at first, but, like, as soon as I saw the structure that we had here with the flow chart, and, you know, there's one in this book, but other materials that have used Chaos Campaigns, they also have their own, you know, flow chart thing. It makes sense from that perspective.
Yeah. Diagram B. Figure A.
And that, if we were referring to it, what page would it be on?
The flow chart is on page 15 of the Chaos Campaign Succession Wars free download.
Ba-ba-ba. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a system of, you know, these connected tracks, and for each of these, you have kind of this monetary system in a way that's a very abstract monetary system called war chest points. This was another thing that I think can trip people up, because you're like, well, what are these other points? And then you get into support points and other things. So I think maybe an easy way to say it's just an abstracted way to pay for all the things that go on, like all the accounting, all the repairs, and, well, not the repairs, sorry. In a way it is, but just kind of like the transport, the administrative stuff. It's a way to not say you have particular types of dollars for things, you just have one type of dollar for all this stuff, and they're called war chest points. And one of the things you have to do for each track before you start is you have to pay a certain number of points. And that's kind of to show, like, you have you're paying all the stuff for transportation, incidental costs, different connections, and different things kind of that would be involved. Kind of an
logisticians, the loggies happy day.
Yeah.
All the logistics.
Right. So you're paying that all at once with these war chest points. And I believe each of the tracks kind of has that as part of the track description, is how many points it costs to be able to do that particular one.
Yep.
And so that's just a way to say, okay, you have the logistics necessary to be able to start this particular track. So that you have kind of a bank, right, of those war chest points, and you're going to spend it on this track.
Yeah, I have a question, Matt. What happens if I or the Op 4 can't pay that that cost for the track?
Oh, there's something called, like, war chest debt.
Yes.
So this is when I go in on Mega Mech and I push the rich uncle button and get my million C bills. This is what I call war chest debt.
turn it on GM mode. God, that's mode. Straight up,
yep.
Mm-hmm. What cheater.
Zimmer, do you guys use war chest debt when you guys use the campaign system?
Well, usually, if you know, thankfully this hasn't come up a lot, but in the few cases that war chest debt has occurred, you can always sell assets. So, you know, if you ever played the Mech Warrior games, you know, oh no, the bills are coming due, I'm just going to sell, like, one of the 13 Panthers I salvaged from the Karita Fund. Yes. You know, that could get you out of war chest debt. You could just, you know, unfortunately, you could just retire the entire force. You know, retire it, give it up, you know, campaign's over, the other guy wins, you know, shake hands, move on to the next campaign. Or you could skip a track. Skipping a track is a bit more involved, talk to your DM about what's going to happen then. But usually it incurs some sort of negative consequence, you know, because, hey, next mission was defend the city. Well, if nobody's there to defend the city, guess what happens? You know?
Yeah. They get the automatic win. I do it's simple enough, depending on how much debt you're in. Right. So it's covered on page 9, and it's really simple, right? If you don't have enough war chest points to purchase the next track, you can you go into debt. Players may not purchase services or equipment or improve their mech warriors with war chest debt. The option is only there to cover the next track's cost. So you can't fix anything. You can't upgrade anything. You are going to battle your next mission with a pre-damaged force, I guess, because you couldn't fix anything because you're broke.
Makes sense.
It does make sense. You know, there's some loan shark out there just waiting for some broken down merc unit to come along and take a bad loan. Yep.
And you got a GM sitting over the corner going, "Where's my money, punk?" Where's my money?
Exactly.
What's like one of the famous back alleys on Solaris where all the bad shit happens?
I think every back alley on Solaris is famous.
Yeah, that's fair.
The one right behind the Valhalla Club is notoriously bad.
It's super bad.
The worst. That's right. Yeah, so that's one of the things. It kind of goes through and talks about this the track description, and that's part of the track description is how many war points or war chest points you need to be able to start the mission. There's a bunch of other things like objectives and how many war chest points you'll get for achieving those objectives. Different special rules, and even like the next tracks that will be available depending on what the outcome is. And that it also has like some general things like what map you'll use. And again, this is written from a classic Battletech standpoint, but you could translate it to Alpha Strike. There's nothing saying you couldn't do that. Just kind of comes down to you finding that sweet spot of how many PV you want to use. You know, map size, things like that. But it does give you some particulars for the classic Battletech side of things. So let's say you get your game set up, you've got balanced op 4, you go in, you play, you have an outcome, the game ends, and now you have a whole bunch of mechs that are beat up, and you need to help them out. So what do we do then, Zimmer?
I think we figure out how to calculate support points.
How do we do that?
So, too long, didn't read. We're assuming secession war rules because I decided to poke my head into the original Chaos campaign and my poor little brain started steaming because they made it more complicated with things like technology rating. And it's like, no, just start with secession wars, please. Just start there. You know, it's easy to calculate support points. It is equal the amount of war chest points you're putting forward multiplied by your force size. Okay, to get your force size, to calculate that, you take the number of mechs you have in the force and divide by your formation. So we can assume that, you know, if you're playing a mercenary, they're going to have like lance formations, which is 4 units to a lance. So to get this number, assuming we have 9 mechs divided by 4 is going to equal, you know, 2.25. For this calculation, we always round up. So that 2. whatever rounds up to 3. All right. So to get our support points, we take the war chest points we're putting up. Let's say I want to put up 150 war chest points. You multiply that by 3, you get back 450 support points. Now, what the hell do I spend these support points on?
Yeah, what do you do? What do we do, Mike?
Got to repair them motive crits.
You can repair mech's entire armor. Support point cost is equal to the tonnage for the way this is written. Repairing its entire internal structure, it's going to cost you tonnage times 2 in support points. And to purchase a whole new mech,
But there's a table for this on page 9.
There's a table on page 9. That's literally what I'm reading. To purchase a brand new mech is the tonnage of that mech times 10. That's how much SP it's going to cost. And you got to heal your warrior because he got hurt. He failed his seatbelt check or... You know, he died, so you got to hire a new one.
F's in the chat.
You got to rearm it because you spent ammunition. You know, upgrading pilot skill, gunnery skill, pilot abilities, It all costs. Nothing's free. Except the PDF.
Yeah, so I do want to point out, like, we were talking about, we were talking previously, I think privately, I think Secession Wars, even though it doesn't specifically state it, I think the system can absolutely be retooled for Alpha Strike with just some minor tweaks here and there. You know, you read the objectives for a lot of these missions. It's going to be like, oh, yeah, eliminate 50% of the enemy force. You know, 50%, you decide between you and your opponent what that means. Is that like 50% of the physical units or like, you know, 50% of the value of the force, whatever. The only thing that's not included in the support cost tables on page 9 is how to advance skills for, you know, units in Alpha Strike. You do have costs for things like gunnery and piling for Classic. But if you have access to it, Hinterlands, and I hate to say this, and not, I don't know if it's in the Mercenaries box, but I do know in Hinterlands, which is a paid PDF if you wish to get it, or physical book even. I think they do have prints of it out right now. But in there, they do have costs for Alpha Strike if you wish to use Chaos Campaign in an Alpha Strike format of play rather than Classic.
Yeah, it's definitely an option if you want to go with the Alpha Strike way, which I really don't think is too different. It's just a more of a deciding between you and the other player or whatever that at what level you'll play at. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is what we use support points for, is for kind of healing your guys and healing your mix, you know, healing your, it could be vehicles or whatnot as well, but
well, it's not only healing, but you can also advance your dudes, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, John Mech Warrior, he survived that last mission. You want to reward him with, you know, maybe, you know, lowering his gunnery skill so he can actually hit something next game. Those costs are on those tables, but that is also something you could spend your support points on.
Yeah.
It's yeah, not were, only just repairing and rearming.
You were mentioning that you guys had used this Chaos Campaign system quite a bit. Did you have a lot of pilots get really upgraded? Like, were you ending up with 1-1 pilots in the end? Or
so we rare? Weren't. We didn't get any 1-1 pilots, but I could tell you right now with the Herd of Nerds, their mercenary company, I think there's a total of like 4 or 5 pilots who are skill 2 in Alpha Strike with special pilot abilities. So depending on how lethal your game is. Now, Bungle Tech's a little interesting because it doesn't, your pilots won't normally die, you know, like they would in these campaigns. That's also something you're always balancing with this kind of campaign. You know, that mech warrior, when that cockpit gets critted out or the head blown off, it's like, I'm sorry, that dude, unless he was able to punch out, he's gone. You know, you buy the new mech warrior, he's a skill, you know, he's a 4-5. You know, he is just right off the streets.
Yeah.
So preserving your dudes becomes a very interesting dynamic with these kinds of campaigns. When I was running my mercenary leagues, like, that was something that a lot of players took into account. It's like, you know, they might not have worried about replacing the mech so much as keeping the pilot alive.
Yeah, it seems, you know, and it mentions this on page 9 of about the skill advancement, that cost that we see in the table there is only if the person took part in the last track, whereas if they didn't, it's 3 times that cost. So there is some benefit to, like, you can't just like have a dude sit in the simulator and then he comes out as a, you know, a 2-2 or something like that. And they can only be improved over time, you know, once per track or once between each track. So I think there is some, like, some buildup. I just wonder if at some point, like, your force becomes OP. But I guess that's part of the balancing between the Op 4 and your force as well.
Yeah.
But it is cool. I don't know if you guys, I know I've played, I've mostly played with a different way to upgrade things where it was more about XP. So that would be kind of like a system where for what they do in a particular mission, not just being in a particular mission and then having kind of separate from that to pay for them becoming better. So I don't know. I like that where you have to kind of act to gain experience and then be upgraded. But I could see some failings there as well. Any thoughts on that from you guys?
This system as it is, I like it because it's not overly punishing. Like these upgrades are not cheap. You know, like we've spoken, you know, to purchase, say, a rifleman, okay, or, you know, the purchase a rifleman, it's going to be a 60-ton battle mech, right? That's going to cost you 600 support points. Okay, do you want to, maybe that's a bad example. We'll say you're buying a locust, all right, 20 tons. You buy that locust, it's going to cost you 200 support points. You could buy that locust, or you can advance the gunnery skill on one of your mech warriors. Like, it's literally the cost of a light mech to take these advancements. So they're not cheap. You do have to earn them. But I don't think it's unattainable either. Yeah.
I guess that's another question is, would you use BV in this case as well instead of tonnage? Because, you know, one mech doesn't equal another. So, you know, a locust versus, you know, a 20-ton clan mech, you in the system as it's written, that tonnage would be the same, but obviously those might be very different in BV. Did you also switch this over to BV?
In these cases, I did not, but I could absolutely see it being a possibility to do that because there is calculations, given for in the Hinterlands campaign. This is more update, you know, this is the most recent update to Chaos campaign where salvage rights for mechs are, you know, the value you get from that is based on either the BV or the PV of the unit. So, you know, your charger, you know, even though it's the same tonnage as, say, a Victor or an Awesome, you know, it's not going to be worth nearly as much in salvage, you know, as either those two mechs that are the same exact tonnage. Yeah. I'm sure you guys could think of an 80-ton clan mech, you know, that would be even more expensive in the Hinterlands system. But
any clan mech, probably. Yeah.
For real.
For sure. But yeah, again, I think that's one place again where you could switch the BV in for tonnage, but however you want to do it, as long as I think it's equal on both sides with you and the op four.
Yeah, exactly. As long as the players and the op four are playing by the same rules and standards, you know, you could choose the balance by BV, and then when it comes to repairing everything, you just agree. Oh no, we're just going to use tonnage. That's fine. You know, but as long as you're playing by the same rules, quote unquote, you're good to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the gist of using the support points. And again, any support points you don't use, you want to translate back into war chest points, and you just reverse the equation that you gave us. Whatever you use to go down, you can use to go back up to war chest points. So then you have your individual tracks. You're putting your force through these individual tracks with the op four. In this particular document, it has a good number of the planetary conditions you might see on these tracks. There are different special rules, and it does have its own like little mini campaign for a planetary assault, which is, I think, really cool. One thing we just touched on just a second ago was salvage. So salvage can occur with whoever holds the map or holds the area at the end of the game. And this is where we get our Panthers, of course, is when you come stomping in with Ben's Davian boys and trash the poor old Kurita Panthers in the back of the map. And when they run off, then you get to get your haul Panther. which I think will be really cool because we're getting the, what is it called? The in one of the new packs, we're getting the mini for the salvage truck, I guess, that you can like lay mechs down for and it could take it away or something. I don't know. That's just kind of fun.
Oh, you're talking about the Savior recovery vehicle.
That's the one. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love that miniature. I love that unit in general. Like, I believe with the new miniature, like you're going to be able to fold the sides and that thing's big enough that you can literally stand a mech on the back of it. So
I did look up pack I bought at Gen Con.
Oh, is it? Yeah, that's one of them.
And it's if like the whole mini, when you get it, like the whole back folds, like comes up vertical and then it's got two wings that open up. So you can just like back up to a standing mech and just do your thing. Reminded me of the Mech Warrior 2, repair vehicles. That would a come
repair
in.
Vehicle. Yeah. That's cool.
I will point out it has a 4-6 movement profile. So it's big enough. Maybe you could just stand an annihilator on it and, you know, maybe the annihilator can reach the front lines for a change.
You take it for a ride. That'd have to be a pretty hefty hoist. That's what I'd say. So salvage. Yeah. You have to hold the field at the end of the track and you have to have completed at least one objective. With that, you get to salvage any non fully destroyed mechs. And fully destroyed just means center torso gone, like completely gone. Other than that, you can salvage it, but you have to repair it using the support points, just like we just said. And if you're going to repair it and sell it, like we've talked about selling Panthers, you have to completely repair it, internal structure, external armor, everything before you sell it. So I think that fits the bill with a lot of other games, BattleTech and MechWarrior games. So.
And is there any cost to salvaging, or do you just shout dibs and throw it on a truck and run away?
Dibs. Yeah. Well, and I think that's one of the things that's supposed to be stated on each track description is if there's salvage available and who can claim it. Like, can only one force claim it, or can either side claim salvage, or neither side? There's some.
You'll find that under special rules for each track, if there are special rules.
If it's a pre-built track, it'll be listed out. If it's a GM created track, that's on them.
Well, and I think this is one of the really cool things about a long-term campaign is that your force changes over time, right? You might get a mech that you're like, oh cool, I want to keep this on instead of selling it. And so whoever you're fighting against, now you're starting to take on the character of your op four in a way with the units that you might have, like on a long term, you're doing 6 months of tracks on a particular planet facing just one type of enemy. You're going to get, if there's salvage available, you're going to have the opportunity to have those start to kind of come into your force, which I think is really neat to have that kind of change.
That is so BattleTech though. It's like when we kick those guys, off the planet, we kept their toys.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it continues to talk about some special rules, some different about landing, tossing your mechs out the side of the dropship or whatnot, or landing in the place you want to. It also talks about battlefield support, like minefields and other supports that can be there.
Now, this isn't the modern, quote-unquote, modern BSPs that we just gotten.
Correct.
This is a different battlefield support. So, it's not to be confused. Like, the value is a little bit different, but...
And do you think you can just take the more modern one and kind of throw it into this system? I don't know. That kind of seems like could in a way, but... Not sure.
I think, well, if you want to use BSPs in their modern sense, you should either start with the rules in the Mercenary box set or get the Hinterlands books. So you could start playing a Chaos Campaign Mercenaries. That goes more in depth with the BSPs, where not only are you laying out minefields or calling artillery strikes, you're also, the good old boys are rolling up in their tanks, to help support us.
We may or may not be discussing that in a near future episode. So there you go. We will be. So there you go. yeah. I think one of the most one of the things that I like the most in this whole document is on page 14, where it's the section that says make it your own. And this is what it says. The very nature of this module is about each player group crafting the type of game they wish to play. I mean, this is very bad, Becky, to be sure. As mm-hmm. such, players are encouraged to change rules that do not suit their particular campaign or circumstance, provided that this happens with the agreement of all involved. So definitely discuss what you're going to do with a campaign like this with your player group. You can kind of pick and choose what you want to, you know, how you want to play it, what you want to include. You can change over time. It's kind of up to your group how to do it. They're just giving you kind of a framework of how to start out and how to maybe continue. And then it has that kind of flow track, and it kind of gives you a strategy for the campaign on the next page, on page 15. Which is great, because what happens in one track, one scenario, however we want to call it, really does change the following track after that. So there's something there's something to each track having, it's like a decision made by your actions in that particular track. And so, you know, if you're getting whooped on one and you pull back, you know, don't play too hard for a particular win. It may bite you in the butt even more, you know, vice versa. So I think it's kind of a really cool system where it's not too long, at least as it's presented. They don't have too many like loop to loop to loops. You could go forever if you really wanted, but there is kind of an attacker wins and there's a defender wins in the end of the. I don't know how you played it, Zimmer, as far as like when there was an end date, if there was one.
There wasn't like a hard set end date. Pretty much mm-hmm. we were going month by month, and again, using the Mercenaries Chaos campaign, every player had like 100% base pay. So even if they didn't have a contract for the, you know, month, quote unquote, in that system, they weren't losing anything. So we kind of just kept moving everybody and like tracking, like, okay, did you get a game this month, quote unquote? Let's record that. If you didn't, that's fine. Nothing happened. You know, just keep your bank account where it's at and we'll roll over into the next one. That's how we kept it going. Yeah. And to that point, I think we had at most 7 games recorded over that 6-month period. So at least once a month, you know, on average, you know, more than once a month, folks were getting in a game. For the campaign. Yeah. So
well, that's awesome. I think that's a great way. You know, people got busy lives. I get that. I myself, it's hard to find like a good steady time, and so I like it as a way to like drop in and out of a particular long-term thing. So I still have something, a vested interest in it, but I can still fit it into the time that I do have to hobby time it. So I really like that type of thing. After that, it kind of goes through some descriptions of tracks. After the tracks, it gives some additional like options for tracks to make up. It gives some additional rules that you could use for advanced technology and whatnot. Some other information to kind of go along with different technology and stuff. But I think that's like the meat and potatoes of the Chaos system is what we've described here. Any other things you guys want to talk about or kind of discuss, or just talk about what you like or dislike?
I won't say, like, I don't think we really need to go into like the pre-built tracks the way they've got it. It's free. It's in the document. It's all very straightforward. It follows the flow chart. It's all nice and simple. I will recommend that. I guarantee a lot of you have source books laying around. All of the source books, at least all the ones I have, in the back have a section called Rules Addendum. And in that section is Chaos Campaign Scenarios. They are similar to this, although slightly different because it's tailored to this set, this era, this scenario. And I think there's some in the Force Manual. I just went through it, and I know I just went through like 4 other source books that are now sitting on my lap. So now I obviously can't remember because that's the one I started with. But each of these all have Chaos Campaign scenarios in them pre-made that you can just get in and go. And then some of the newer source books do mention both references for either Classic or Alpha Strike. So, yes, in the Succession Wars book or PDF, there's no Alpha Strike references, really. But in the newer stuff, you'll start to see those. And then so if you look at whatever you have, you could start to piece together in your brain what adjustments for Alpha Strike would be necessary or needed. I also wanted to mention on page 161 of the Campaign Operations Rulebook is more Chaos Campaign rules. It's a little bit more in depth than the Succession Wars one, but I do love on this, that first page, it has a little breakout box that says, "What's with all the versions?" And it says, ever since the introduction of the Chaos Campaign rules in the dawn of the Jihad, there have been several different versions printed in various products. Because the Chaos Campaign rules at their core are a flexible track system tailored, each version is tailored to a particular product in order to bring about a unique and replayable campaign for players. So that perfectly explains why in everything you look, whether it's Campaign Operations, Chaos Campaign, Succession Wars, or any of your source books, it's all going to be a little different. And that's why. Oh, and again, in the free PDF, it also mentions that there are tracks, pre-made tracks, in a lot of other products. So I just mentioned the source material, but like the actual like big spine source books, but also your PDFs of your turning points. There's stuff in there as well. And it's listed out on page 27 of the free PDF. This was made 6 years ago, so there's probably a couple more by now, but there's a lot of stuff already made. And so you can start with all this pre-made stuff and then start to crank out some homebrew, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. I believe the Chaos Campaign is an excellent way to play Battletech. In my experience, I've even had brand new players. Literally, guy walked into the club the one day, never played Battletech before. He was told by his buddy, like, hey, come join us for our game. We can slot you in. He came in, he started up, very first game, he was playing a campaign, and he's fallen in love with this, and I love playing with him. This is obtainable, even for new players. You know, I'm afraid some people might think, oh, campaign play is going to be too complex, overly, you know, I only have so much time, but. I believe Chaos Campaign is a great way to jump in and get in, you know, how I think Battletech should be played as a ongoing narrative of sorts. You know, pickup games are great and fun. I love doing it, but the amount of storytelling you can get, you know, the emergent storytelling of, you know, not only do you remember the time, you know, you remember even more when you headshot, you know, somebody's cockpit, because it's like, no longer is it just like, oh, we just decided to play for today. It's like, oh no, that dude had a name, you know, this during a campaign. It's like, you might've fought that same mech warrior like two or three times. And it's like, oh, that dude's just paced now, you know, they're hosing him out of the cockpit. I hope this doesn't sound sadistic, but it hurts a little bit more. And I think that's good because it sticks with you.
Yeah, I think the first rule for my campaigns that I've done is every pilot has to have a name. That is like a thing that I got from, what's it called? It's a board game, Memoir 44, I think. Every dude has a name, and so it adds something to it. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I do that for my games. Again, just playing a game today on Tabletop Simulator, I sat there and I told you know, the guy I was playing with, I was like, hey, you just got a new pilot. What's his name? He couldn't think of anything. So I was just like, you know what? He's the new guy. His call sign is spare parts for now. You know, on a later date, he can earn another name, you know, but right now his call sign is spare parts, you know, and it helps you form more of an attachment with them. You know, it's the, you know, it is still all a game, but it, you know, it, you start to get the feeling of like, oh, these are my dudes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I like it. Ben, do you, what do you think of the whole system or what you like or dislike or what?
I'm a fan. It definitely simplifies things. It's, you know, if you're a classic player, it's easy breezy, you know. Alpha Strike, it takes a little bit of brain power to kind of convert a lot of the point values and things like that. Like I said before, you know, it's due for a refresh or an update, whatever you want to call it, to bring it more in line with the Alpha Strike box set stuff. Because, I mean, all the references I've seen is all to a game of Armored Combat, you know, back when it was pushed out 10 years ago, 15 years ago. So it's definitely due for an update. But if an enterprising GM can kind of tweak it how he wants to tweak it to make it work. And I agree with you guys, you know, naming pilots in a campaign kind of makes that subconscious personal attachment to him. So you try to avoid them taking hits. You tend to like one because he pilots a mech you like or something like that, you know. So it kind of goes down that road of making the game matter in the campaign, you know. That's just my thoughts.
I will add, I don't think you need to, you know, if you want to go the lazy route of things and you want to, you know, you're only going to download Secession Wars. You absolutely could put in the extra effort to convert that however you want to accommodate Alpha Strike. But products out right now include Hotspots Hinterlands, which does take Alpha Strike into account. It does have all those conversions. And at that point, it's easy breezy to go through. And that's what I've been playing with my Alpha Strike group, using the Hinterlands campaign system. It still falls underneath the umbrella of, you know, Mercenaries Chaos Campaign. But, you know, they done the legwork that Secession Wars didn't, you know, take into account.
Nice. Yeah. So it's there. It's there to play.
It's there to play. And I think the PDF is like $15, you know?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Well, cool. Yeah, great discussion of Chaos Campaign. I'm sure we will return to it in the near future. Coming up next is one hot drink of the month.
Hey, all. This is Ben here, your BattleTech Master of Spirits. Get your mixers, liquors, shakers, stirrers, and strainers ready as we cover this month's BattleTech Drink of the Month.
All right, folks, your drink of the month this month is water. Make sure you hydrate. We're not going alcohol. It's August. It's hot out. Make sure you drink water. This is your once annual PSA for the year. Drink water. We will return next month with some mind-altering things.
So, with the brown.
With the brown. Yeah, need
a little brown to wash it down.
That's right. That's right.
Woo! Drink water.
Hydrate. Right. Take your Motrin.
Water and ibuprofen all around, boys.
Makes all the illnesses go.
The old man M&M's right there.
That's it.
Every okay. Military medic is smiling right now.
Hey, I got to do my part. Love my corpsman.
I'm doing my part.
Okay. There's your drink for the month. No, you have to say that. That's your drink for the month thing.
Oh, and don't mix it with bourbon. I mean, you can, but you don't get the same hydration level. So that's your drink of the month. Woo!
Okay, on to some upcoming action. That's events that are coming up. Oh, maybe near us, maybe not so near us, but that we're attending or hoping to be at, things like that. Coming up in Denver, Colorado, actually in a but that's just part of Denver. Tacticon on August 28th through 31st. It'll be a mishmash of Alpha Strike and BattleTech classic BattleTech events. I know a good chunk of the guys are setting up events there. I think they may even be running some, I'm not sure if it's games or demos of what used to be battle troops and what they're calling skirmishers now. They're trying to revamp that, kind of modernize that set. So should be a good group of games if you're in the area. Come out to Tacticon last weekend in August. After that, we've got Desert Hot Drop 25 happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, September 19th through the 21st. So that's 6 weeks from today. Haha, that'll work. Close to 6 weeks now. But there are still a couple about players. So if you hear this and you can make it out to Las Vegas, come out and play a whole bunch of different games. We'll have Alpha Strike tournaments, BattleTech, a classic BattleTech tournament called Through the Ages. It's pretty fun. We'll have narrative events, different narrative events like a campaign in a day, using quite a bit of the Chaos Campaign stuff we talked about tonight. Not completely, but quite a bit of it will be Chaos Campaign related. There'll be different social events. There'll be a quick painting contest, so everyone will get a primed mini, and you'll have an hour and a half to make it as pretty as you can with your own with paints and brushes available. Whoever comes out with the prettiest mini wins a prize. There'll also be painting competitions throughout the weekend. Other different social events. So all coming up, there's a Discord channel, there's a Facebook event page, all sorts of stuff. So come out and join us at Desert Hot Drop 25 if you can make it. And then the third one, Ben, why don't you talk about KSAG real quick?
Actually, the fourth one. The third one is for those of you, do we have any overseas listeners, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, we've got some in England, Australia, New Zealand, Canada.
Right. Well, the off season in New Zealand, you're probably screwed, but
some Europe too. Yeah,
over in Europe, Spiel Essen is going on October 23rd through the 26th, I believe. There you go. Yep, 23rd to 26th October, Spiel Essen in Essen, Germany.
I hear
so
it's pretty
go
big.
Check it out. Yep, it's the kind of the Gen Con of Europe. So if you're into that kind of thing, go check it out. You can go say hi to Daniel Iceburner over there. And the fourth one is KSAG, a.k.a. Kroll Sisters of Go-Go, a.k.a. the Kroll Siblings Annual Gathering of Gamers. I prefer the Go-Go part.
But, yeah, it rolls off the tongue more.
It definitely does. That is December 4th through the 7th. It's going to be at the Wyndham Hotel in lovely Burnsville, Maryland, I think it is. Or Burnsville, Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, Burnsville, Minnesota, which is like south of Minneapolis. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Lots of classic play, lots of Alpha Strike play. There's paint and take. There's a painting class by one of the CSO artists, I believe. There's going to be a 350 tournament, both singles and doubles. There's a Wolf's Dragoons versus Word of Blake on Outreach, Battle of Outreach 1 and 2, put on by Jeff Stone. There's a King of the Hill. There's all kinds of stuff going on. There's even going to be a Hunter's Paradise dinosaur roundup while you're there. So if you're in Minneapolis, December 4th through the 7th, or 4th or 3rd?
4th, yeah.
4th, yeah. 4th through the 7th, come check out KSAG. If you want more information, go listen to WNRP.
I'm definitely in for tasing some dinosaurs. That's all I know.
Yeah, man. I started writing rules for it this week, so it's going to be – I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, come out, get out, you know, play in your local area, come play at these larger cons. I know that for Desert Hot Drop and KSAG, the idea is the same, is to just be out there with a community of great people and have a good time playing games we love. So, yeah, it should be really fun. Yeah, go out and play. With that, we'll jump over to some shout-outs. And it looks like I'm first on the list, so I will just shout out two people and groups. So there's some new terrain called Recon Terrain from 8box Studios. And you should check it out. They have a website that just came out. It opened up this week. It's got great terrain for Alpha Strike. Really cool textured terrain. You probably saw it at Gen Con, right, Ben?
Yeah, all the 350 tables had the 8box terrain out there, or the 8box studio stuff. It was all magnetized too. I don't know if it comes magnetized like that, but whoever I know, I think it was Corey Heald.
Yeah.
He kind of put all that stuff together. It's a really, really good terrain. It's all 3D printed stuff. But it was pretty phenomenal. So it was kind of the talk of Gen Con in the BattleTech area was that terrain. So it looks really good.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we're going to have some featured at Desert Hot Drop. So they're one of the sponsors for the event. So we're excited to have some of that out there. It just looks really good on the map. So excited to have that, as well as a new adjoining sponsor joined this week. So we've got Thunderhead Studios, another player in the terrain game for BattleTech. Love Christopher over at Thunderhead Studios. He's really supported us here in Colorado, but also the greater BattleTech community. So we're going to have some of his new stuff on our classic maps for Desert Hot Drop. So excited to have that out there. Just really, really grateful and want to shout out those two groups and people that have really helped with this and are going to be helping the BattleTech community. And just for us to have good looking stuff instead of just like flat paper mats. I mean, I played with flat paper mats for a long time, but it the 3D stuff, it kind of helps with my imagination. And it's really cool to have them do that. Ben, over to you, man.
No, man. List O shout outs. Where do I start?
Did you take notes this time from Gen Con?
I did take notes, but it's funny because I don't feel like I have like individual shout outs for a lot of folks because I played in big groups of things. Definitely a shout out to the OMAM crew. I played them on the narrative game, both Kanan, Brent, and Aaron. They were a lot of fun, really good guys to hang out with, a lot of fun stories that we told. The Wolfnet crew, Wolfnet podcast crew, you know, Bloodbath, Tommy, Charles, Andrew again, and Aaron. So good job putting all that stuff together. They ran 350 singles all day, every day, Thursday, Friday, and most of Saturday. So they were putting in a lot of work. And did a lot of good stuff. Masters of Minions, the Bovies, you know, Tom and Daniel, you guys did a great job, you know, working with what you got. You know, me and Charles were just screwing around having a good time. So, and it was one of those things that we started talking about at Adepticon. What the hell are we going to do kind of thing. So appreciate you guys coming out. Carl Franklin and Travis from Denver, you know, thanks for playing us. You know, we had a lot of fun, but it was late and we were all tired. So, Nothing bad happened. Everybody, I hope you guys have a good time. The Escalation guys from Alaska, and the one junior member from Columbus, Ohio. Thanks for coming out for Escalation, and hope you continue your fight on the battlefield. So, and always to Derek over at Ares Games and Minis and the Iron Winds Metals crew for the amount of things that I have purchased in the last 2 weeks for reasons. So thanks for all you guys do. That's all I got, Matt.
Good reasons. Love it. Mike, let's hit you, man.
All right. My shout out this month goes to you, Matt, for everything you've done with Desert Hot Drop. As far as I know, this was your brainchild since the loss, rest in peace, of then being announced that we're not at the next LVO, or it was this LVO. Yeah, because I was 25. Yeah, look, my year's all fucked up. But yeah, big. He's been putting all of this on, and it is way bigger. And I'm like, I think last time was when I found out like there's all these sponsors and things. And I was like, dude, that's awesome. So Matt's awesome. Good job, Matt.
Well, thank
you. Shout out to you, buddy.
It's all self-serving, and I want my boys to have. So there you go. That's it. Zimmer, let's hit you, man.
Yeah. Just this month, I really want to give a shout out to the folks in the Discord here in the Valhalla Club. They really do make this place the best for hanging out with Battletech. I've been not only playing Tabletop Simulator, but, you know, the various video games. I still want to be hopping into more MechWarrior Online. You know, as we're speaking, we have a group of folks lined up for MechWarrior Online and, you know, blown up mechs. But some individuals in particular, I want to shout out, you know, Legion. I mentioned him before. Have been having a blast with him in MechWarrior 5. Folks like Queefmaster69, I just wanted to say your name. Thank you. But it's been great playing games with you as well. And so many others, honestly, in the Discord. It really does liven this place up and, you know, keeps me motivated to keep coming around and doing things.
Awesome. Gotta love the community in the Discord. It's awesome.
There's literally three of them right now in the Discord voice chat, all sharing their screens playing MechWarrior Online. These guys rock.
That's awesome.
I know, you know, it's getting a little bit late now, but I know earlier today there was even more folks in there. So
yeah, it's great to see people playing together. Always good. And with that, for this episode, that'll be the last call.
Last call.
Last call.
Last call.
Now get out of here.
Go on, get.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
We're not singing the song.
Thanks for joining us today in the Valhalla Club. If you'd like to hang out with us and many other Battletech podcasters, then be sure to join our Discord. Link is in the description. Special thanks to our sponsor, Ares Games and Miniatures. Ares is the premier online retailer for all your Battletech needs. If you would like to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thevalhallaclub. If you have any comments, please feel free to send an email to thevalhallaclub@outlook.com. Until next time, mech fans.